week two, talking about prayer, one that doesn't come comfortably for me. And so what I thought I would start off with this morning is a little game, a little quiz. And I'm entitling it, Would You or Wouldn't You Pray for That? And I'm just going to throw out some examples, and we'll talk about would you not pray for that? Because here's what I'm inclined to think when it comes to prayer, we start thinking about prayer, is most of us, maybe whether we've thought about it consciously or not, have a distinctive personal list of things that we won't pray about if asked to. And you might say, why is that? Well, generally, I think there's two reasons. We either struggle with prayer because we think nobody's listening, we don't think prayer will make any difference. Or second, right, we don't think prayer should be used in that manner. So for instance, if I said to you, listen, I got a real soft spot for the Jays, would you keep them in your prayer? Like, part of you is probably going to be like, well, no, that just, you know what, let's not get God involved in sports. That doesn't seem like something we should pray about. And so there can be sort of two reasons why we don't pray. We don't think it works, don't think anyone's listening, or you know what, that's just a little too shallow, perhaps, to bring to prayer. And so I want to just give you some examples. No need to keep score, no need to show hands. This is your own personal little inventory. Because what I think it will do is actually, when I talk to people, there's a lot of, I don't know what I think about prayer. Well, this will help show you what you actually think of prayer. And there's no right or wrong answers. If it's all, if it's none, it's no big deal. But let's just start that way, get a sense of where we're at with prayer. So, number one, imagine I said to you, you know what, we got Soup Sunday outside and it's forecast to rain. Would you pray that there'd be no rain for Soup Sunday? Would you pray for that? Again, no need to show hands, personal inventory here. All right, or second, you've been offered a job, it's more money, but it might be longer hours. Would you pray for discernment around whether to take a job offer or not? Or three, somebody says, Fluffy is not doing well. I'm scared for my dog. Would you please pray for my dog? Would you pray for that? Or four, you've got a tough conversation. Maybe it's with the in-laws, your spouse, a friend, your boss. Whatever it is, you got a tough conversation coming. Would you pray for courage, wisdom, discernment, kindness for that? Or what if somebody said to you, number five here, hey, I'm having trouble selling my house. This is stressing me out. Would you pray that my house sells? Six, would you pray for a friend who's been diagnosed with cancer? Seven, would you pray for Justin Trudeau and Doug Ford? Somebody says to you, I think it's good that we pray for our leaders. Would you pray for Justin Trudeau and Doug Ford? Number eight, it's Refugee Sunday. Somebody says, hey, would you pray for refugees around the world? Nine, you got a friend struggling with addiction. Would you pray for that? Or 10, if I said, hey, would you pray that this season at Nexus goes well? We grow spiritually, we grow together as a community. Would you pray for that? Now, again, my goal here with these scenarios is not to make you feel guilty or bad. I just want to give you a sense of where you're at with prayer. If you said yes to all of them, that's great, that's fine. If you said yes to some, to none of them, it's all good, it's all good. If you weren't sure about all of them, that's fine too. We just want to get a sense, where are we here with prayer? And my guess, though, is this, that even if you said yes to one of the more serious ones, like a friend struggling with cancer, it isn't always exactly clear to us, well, what exactly should I be praying for? Is that asking for intervention, for healing? What exactly are we supposed to do in prayer? I want to address that this morning. Last week, we kind of did an intro. What is prayer? It seems like a simple question, right? It's this thing, we talk to an invisible thing. It's like, what exactly is prayer? Well, I want to take us through a few things this morning, what I think are some of the best minds, Jesus on prayer, and then some of my own reflections at the end. But what is prayer? Well, I think St. John Damascene, a Syrian monk, really gets to the heart of it when he says, prayer is the raising of one's mind and heart to God. And this definition, it really comes out of a passage in the Book of Lamentations. And the author there is, they've been carted off to Babylon. That's the big question of the Old Testament. Why are we here? Why are we in Babylon? Where did we mess up? And so in Lamentations, what he exhorts the people to do is, right, let's examine our ways and test them. Let us return to the Lord. Let us lift up our hearts and minds to God in heaven. Prayer in its simplest form is really just raising one's mind and heart to God. It really is as simple as that. Taking what occupies heart and mind and bringing it into the presence of God. An evaluation of what's going on in my heart, what's going on in my mind. And I want to sort of circle back to some of the scenarios I gave you. Let's talk about how this starts to shift. Would you pray for no rain? Well, I'll be honest about me. No, I'm not praying for no rain. I don't think God got involved in weather, so that's probably not something I'm going to pray about. But if someone were to ask me that, would you pray for no rain? I think it presents an interesting prayer exercise. Because what tends to happen is we lift up our heart and minds to God. It's like, wow, this event seems to be really important to this person. And so I'm just bringing that to you. I think it's silly to not pray for rain, but for this person, this event seems to be really important. So I'm going to bring that to you. Or what about a job offer? It's like, well, I'm not really convinced God cares too much what job you have. But there's an opportunity in situations like this in our lives when we're presented with a choice where we can bring heart and mind to God. You know what? Maybe more money is good because then I can be more generous. I can be more hospitable. But, you know, maybe there's some sacrifices there that I'll have to make. Less time with the family, less time with friends, whatever it is. I think there's a simple value in, you know what? Whatever is going on in here, I'm going to bring heart and mind to God. And what that tends to start to do for you is it draws you out of yourself, takes you outside of yourself. Or St. Therese of Lisieux, I think that's how it's pronounced. Apparently, I always pronounce things wrong. I think that's how it is. We did a series on her, French Carmelite. She says this, "For me, prayer is a surge of the heart. It's a simple look turned toward heaven. It's a cry of recognition and of love, embracing both trial and joy." And this is coming out of the Psalms, the ancient prayer book, right? Psalm 42 speaks to this. The psalmist writes, "As the deer pants for streams of water, my soul pants for you, my God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. Where can I go and meet with God? And why, my soul, are you downcast? Why so disturbed within me? Put your hope in God, for I will yet praise him, my Savior and my God. My soul is downcast, though, within me. Therefore, I remember you. Deep calls to deep. The roar of your waterfalls. All your waves and breakers have swept over me." There's this sense in the psalm where it's just the deepest parts of myself want to connect with you. I think this is what Therese is getting at. Prayer is simply surge of the heart looking for understanding. The deepest parts of yourself looking for connection with its creator. So I'd say prayer is almost an unconscious act. It sort of recognizes our souls were created by God and there's something deep within me that wants to connect there. I think it's a great way to think about prayer because I don't know about you, but for me in life, I'm very reticent to expose the deepest parts of myself. Two weeks before the summer started, I injured my toe. I don't know what I did. It was just, again, it's one of those things, I'm hurt, nothing even happens, I just hurt. But I could hardly walk, and we were about to go and do a lot of hiking in the summer, so I was very discouraged. I want to be able to hike this summer, and so I was desperate to find any healing, any relief, and I'd never tried acupuncture before. And I thought, well, let's do it, let's go to acupuncture. And the moment I got in there, it was just so much more intense than I thought. Like, I thought some guy put needles in me, good to go. But it began with a complete inventory of my life, which I didn't know was coming. So the first thing he did is he's like, "Can you stick out your tongue?" I'm like, "What?" He's like, "I don't know if you're hydrating well enough." And then he started asking a series of questions. How much do you drink every week? How much do you exercise? Do you get enough sleep? Are you drinking enough water? Are you depressed? I'm like, "What? I'm here for my toe." And all of a sudden, I'm like, "Whoa, you're asking these deep questions." He's like, "How stressed are you? How anxious? How's your marriage going?" I'm like, "Really? I wasn't here for therapy, but oh my goodness, this guy was just so intense, and I felt like he was just looking into my soul." And I'm like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa! This is close. This is deep. You're calling to deep, but I don't want to respond. This is getting too much." And then it was finally time for the needles, and he started putting them in, and all around my leg it was fine until he got to the sensitive toe, and he would put a needle in like poof, just boom, put it in, and right around the toe it hurt, so I cried out, "Ah!" And he would jump up to my head and be like, "Does it hurt or is it sore?" And I said, "Well, that hurt." And then he'd jump back down and twist it, and I said, "Ah!" He He said, is it hurt or is it sore? I said, sore? Is that the right word? No, he kept twisting this excruciating pain. And I'm like, what's the safe word here? Because hurt and sore, neither of them seemed to be working. He just kept hurting me. And then he finally got all of them in. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to have 20, 30 minutes, whatever it is, on my own. He said, okay, you're set. We'll take them out in 30 minutes. And then he just sat beside my head, just looking at me writing. I'm like, what? This is just, I'm like, what is going on? And he never left the room. He just stood there looking at me. And I was like, this is too much. This is way too intense. So I haven't gone back to acupuncture since then. But I don't know, but there's parts of myself that I know I'm like, oh, that's there. But the thing is this, it's not even just strangers like an acupuncture doctor. It's those moments then. Even the people closest to us, we sense, you don't quite get what's going on. And I know for me, one of the things that I love about this psalm is it mentions nature, right? Some of our experiences in nature. I don't know about for you, but for me, when I'm in nature connecting, it's this simultaneous experience of feeling completely seen and known while also feeling so incredibly small. And it's a very uncomfortable thing for us to pour ourselves out to people that are completely unknown to us, especially when there's pain involved. But it's not easy to pour ourselves out even to those of us who know us best. We feel like something gets lost in translation, don't quite understand. But I would like what Therese gets here is prayer is the language of recognition. The deep calls to the deepest parts of me. And when I think about some of the scenarios I laid out earlier, do we go in prayer about a tough conversation that we need to have? Well, there's an acknowledgement, there's a deepness there where it's like, you know, I might have a tough conversation coming up, and even the closest people to me might say, just get it done, you know, just go and have that talk with your parents or whoever. But so often what's missed is deep inside of us, we feel those moments like you don't understand what's at stake. One wrong word here, and this could really change things. Or when we're asked to pray for someone with cancer, if we actually allow prayer to go deep into ourselves, what happens is it becomes an exercise not just of, hey, I love my friend and I don't want to lose them, but it becomes a wrestling match, you could say, with our own mortality. Because every time I have to pray for someone who's sick, it brings me close to my God, I'm scared. I'm scared of mortality. I'm scared of losing the people we love. So there's something about prayer where it's just the deepest parts of ourselves connecting. That's what prayer is. Or Walter Burghardt, Jesuit theologian, this is perhaps my favorite one, says this, prayer is a long, loving look at the real. Gentle invitation to look at your life, look at the world quietly, truthfully, in the presence of God's love. And prayer is long because it's a deepening connection with God that can only come with time, but it's also a noticing, a loving look with God at our lives and being willing to confront what is real. I had a difficult moment this summer. I decided to pop in on Glenn. And I said, I haven't seen Glenn. I got to pop in on Glenn. So I said, Glenn, I'm coming by. He said, come on into the backyard. And the moment I came into the backyard, I could tell by both of their eyes something was a little off. There was just they raised their eyes like that. And I came over, Glenn, Maggie, and the kids. And Maggie introduced me. This is our pastor. I could almost sense there was a bit of embarrassment in the tone of her voice. I was confused. Introduced to the kids, and then Glenn and I retired to the back house, exchanged some pleasantries, and then at one point he simply said, so do you want to talk about this, pointing at me. What are you talking about? He's like, do you want to talk at all about how you've presented yourself today? And you know, with Glenn, I always feel in good hands. I knew this was going to be a long, loving look at the real. And what I realized is I had shown up in dark jean shorts, T-shirt like this, dark shoes, socks rolled up, my beard, I hadn't shaved in over a month, it was sticking out here, my hair was all over the place, and lovingly, he said, you don't look well, Brad, you don't, you don't. And then he gently suggested what you could use, Brad, is actually a bit of a makeover. Seems you've been sticking with that black shirt for a bit long. And I, because it's Glenn, I felt safe. Deep calls to deep here. I felt safe. I was like, okay, if Glenn's flagging this about me, that's fine. I went home to Kristen, immediately said, I need to go and do some shopping. She said no. But then, towards the end of the summer, she said, okay, you can go out. She said, why don't you invite Glenn to go shopping with you since he suggested the makeover? I've never been more scared sending a text message in my life because I was like, this could really change the nature of our friendship. But Glenn, do you want to go clothes shopping with me? What a gentle soul. He was like, absolutely, Brad. And he took me out shopping. And he gave me a long, loving look at the reel. I tried on things. He's like, no, I'm sorry. That doesn't look good. Try this. He was the most gentle person I've ever been shopping with. Like, Kristen, she's like, you can put on a toga. I don't care. I'm not in it for that, okay? But no, he took the time. He spent time with me. And there was a moment at the end where he even had me come into a leather shop. Let's try on this jacket, Brad. Put on this leather jacket. Oh, did I look good? And then I looked at the price tag. It was $500. Glenn's like, I think you should, you know, spend a little money, look good. And I knew in that moment that I would be dead if I bought this jacket. And I subtly raised with Glenn, if I buy this, I think Kristen's anger is going to be shared equally between me and you. And he quickly said, don't get the jacket, Brad. I don't want the ire of Kristen on me. But he eventually found this at Winners in the clearance rack, this thing. But Glenn took the time to look at me with honest, truthful eyes. And it hurt a little, okay? It hurt a little. A long, loving look at the real, being honest about ourselves. And I think that's what prayer is. And it brings me back again to some of the scenarios we talked about. What does it mean to take a long, loving look at the real? I've been asked to pray for pets. And it always bothers me until I start praying. Because I'm like, animals, really? I have enough trouble praying for humans, let alone animals. But when I've been asked to pray for that, a long, loving look at the real, what so often comes to mind for me in those moments is it's not about that Fluffy will get better. It's that, my goodness, for somebody, this animal represents a whole lot more than I could ever imagine. And so the real that I'm looking at is not the request. What I'm looking at is, what does this mean for this person? What's going on inside of them? What does this dog pet mean to them? Or consider being asked to pray for Justin Trudeau or Doug Ford. I mean, we all have our political opinions. We all hate certain politicians. But when we sit down to pray for something like that, like a long, loving look at the real, my goodness, they're human. And I can't imagine the pressure. It is. Because here's the thing, I know people don't like me, but I don't go walking around and see flags that say F Brad on it. And I don't care how thick-skinned you are, that can't be easy, knowing people hate you. And so a long, loving look at the reels to simply say, hey, oh, maybe I don't agree with stuff, but they're human. And I can pray for that. I can pray that somebody might be able to get through the day and be able to withstand criticism, all that stuff. It's a long, loving look at the real. And what we learn to discover about prayer, and I think this is so important, is that as we do that, what we come to realize is, as C.S. Lewis said probably about 100 years ago, I don't pray to change God. It doesn't change God, it changes me. Which is the primary purpose of prayer. It's not to get God to do what we think God ought to do, but to be properly formed. And I can't stress this enough. Prayer is not about getting God to do things so the world looks more like we want it to. Because if prayer was that, then prayer would be the exercise of telling God why you would do a better job. Prayer is about being properly formed. It's about our change, our growth. And we see this play out profoundly in the life of Jesus. And Karl Rahner has a great little book on the three things we learn from Jesus about prayer. And the first thing that we learn about prayer from Jesus is this, is confidence. And I messed up the slides again. It was two, and it was nice. Change it around, sorry. 2 weeks in a row. But listen to this. Jesus is praying about the Lazarus situation. And he prays out loud and he says this, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing there. Jesus comes to prayer confidently. And I know one of our deepest struggles with prayer is the question, does God actually hear me? Is anybody listening? And Jesus comes to prayer confidently and says, I know God hears us. I know that. That I'm confident of. And we might not have the confidence of Jesus, but there's something there to learn from Jesus. All right, I'm going to accept on trust. God's listening in some capacity. But then second lesson we learn from Jesus is that petition, it's a wrestling with God. Prayer is a wrestling with God. In the Garden of Gethsemane, he cries out, right? Father, if you're willing, take this cup from me. I do not want what I see happening and approaching here. And so he's there in the garden. We're told he sweats like blood, right? Sweats like he's bleeding. So prayer would say is this, it's a wrestling match. This is the same posture that Jesus' ancestor Jacob took. Jacob wrestled with God. I really like to think of Nexus as the Jacobian community. We are the ones who wrestle with God. And he walks away with a limp, but he walks away blessed. And I think this is the posture of prayer. Our egos, our anxieties, our worries, all of them we come away maybe limping, but there's a blessing just in virtue of getting in the wrestling ring. And one of my favorite things to do with my kids is wrestle. I love it. Love it. And it used to be back in the day I could take all three of them on at the same time. It doesn't work. It's too much now. A little fist of fury everywhere. I get hurt. So one at a time now. And with Evie, she loves wrestling, but guaranteed she's going to be crying at the end. Something will happen. She gets hits on the head. She's crying. I'm like, that's kind of like prayer. You get hurt somewhere in there a little bit. But Huxley is the real wrestler. And he won't give up. He just keeps wrestling and wrestling and wrestling. And there are times where his hair is just, he's just soaked, sweating, wrestling, wrestling. I'm trying to figure out, because he knows I'm not one of those dads that's like, oh, I'm going to let you in. I don't think so. I'll let you get close. Count of two, one, two, no, I'm up. And realize that for Huxley, because a lot of things happen in your body when you're wrestling. It's a primary way to learn about the way our bodies feel, what hurts others, what hurts me. And what I've realized is that Huxley just likes the intimacy of wrestling, and so in a certain way, he's wrestling to lose. You know, he knows he's going to lose, but there's an intimacy just in the wrestling. We learn about our bodies, what the other person reacts, and I've come to see this as a bit of a metaphor for prayer. Because Jesus gets into the wrestling ring with God and it ends with submission. Not my will, but your will be done. So prayer to me is a wrestling match where you wrestle in order to lose. It's wrestling with God, knowing we'll come away limping but blessed. And notice what happens when this starts to take place in our lives is we're constantly being pulled out of ourselves. It's a slow work that changes us slowly. It's the pace of a tree growing. It's not noticeable. It's slow. No one notices a tree growing, but it does slowly. The work of prayer is similar. It's not about changing God. It's about changing us. And yet, even knowing that, because some of us have probably heard that throughout our lives, prayer is about changing us, it still leaves a nagging question for me. How exactly does prayer change me? Well, I've been thinking about this a lot, thinking about this series. Prayer is always, I would say, a warring with our pragmatic side. Nagging question for many of us is prayer practical? I would caution us, though, about allowing ourselves to measure prayer by pragmatics. I think that's a mistake. Because what we deem practical is also is generally on a secular level. Does it save me time? Does it make me more efficient? Does it benefit my agenda, my hobbies, my passions? It's a mistake in my estimation to make prayer about a pragmatic thing. Because the truth is this, we all know pragmatics aren't everything in life. For instance, if you have any art on your wall, you know that. You say, well, that doesn't do anything. Well, doesn't it? Doesn't have beauty on the wall, do something. It might not be pragmatic, but it does something. Or gardening. My neighbors, they never go away in the summer. They just putts all summer, 9 a.m. till 9 p.m., just putzing in the garden. And at the end, they got 20 tomatoes. And I'm like, you've put hundreds of hours. And you know, you could have bought that for $5 at the grocery store. It's not pragmatic. It's not practical how much time you put in there. But they would, of course, respond to me, I think you're missing the point, Brad. It's about connecting with the earth, getting my hands in the dirt. It's not about a bountiful crop. That something cannot be pragmatic or practical and yet still serve a really useful purpose. And so I do believe prayer changes us slowly, humbly changes us. But I would argue that beneath the prayer, that prayer is not just a tool we use to change ourselves. I would say this, it's more about an identity formation, a mode of being in relating to the world. David Kelsey calls prayer this, doxological gratitude. What does that mean? Prayer is both renunciation and receptivity, and in that, our identity starts to form. And so in prayer, what I do is I renounce the unhealthy ways that I grasp at significance and try to justify my existence and worth in the eyes of the world. Renounce those things. And I've been really hesitant to talk about Bruxy because I'm still working it out in my head. But it reminded me of a prayer thing that's been going on with me for years, because any pastor who's being honest with you will say to you that they wish they were Bruxy a year ago. Wish we had the impact or the stage, the influence of Bruxy. And for years now, this has been part of my wrestling in prayer. What I realize when I break it down in prayer is, why do we want certain things? This is mine, you might have yours, but why do we want the bigger stage, the bigger platform, the bigger voice? Well, it's all, I think when we're honest with ourselves, taking a long, loving look at the real, it's a way that we grasp at significance and worth. And we try to justify that. If I had an audience of this big, well, then people would know that I'm a good pastor. And yet what happens in the wrestle match of prayer is this, is you're confronted with questions. Do you think you could handle that power? Do you think you could avoid the temptations that come with bigger power and influence? What tends to happen is we realize in prayer, because we're naked, is that we realize the answer is perhaps uncomfortable. And that's been a real wrestle for me. Or I asked Kristen if I could do this, but we all wrestle with this in different ways. She ran a triathlon last weekend. She works so hard, training every day, up early, doing her thing. And for her, it's always, I want to finish top three. And she ran her race, best time she's ever posted in her life. Fastest swim, fastest bike, fastest run. And she finished fifth. In that wrestling match on the way home, oh, I'm so frustrated and disappointed and annoyed because I wanted top three. And it's a good and healthy thing to want success based on what you do. That's a good and healthy thing. But what often happens, right, is we become tied to, if I don't achieve this, then I won't look as significant or worthy to others. And so for her to be on the podium, right, is what? Validation. All the work I put in. See, it's about an identity thing. And in prayer, what we do is the wrestling match of going, my worth and significance does not depend on success. It doesn't depend on these outward markers. And so we renounce those things. And what happens is, in the renouncing, we end up having a posture of receptivity. In renouncing and receiving, the anxious knot that's at the core of our selfhood, it's slowly untangled. We find ourselves turning outward with joy and love. And so I would say this, what prayer does is it develops what some have called a Eucharistic identity, a life that flows out of gratitude, joy, peace, and thanksgiving. And that's the true point of prayer. It's about identity. And yes, I believe out of that we're changed, but the point is not the pragmatic aspects of prayer. The point is our identity, who we are, what we're clinging to. And what that tends to do is allow us to receive life as a gift, because when you stop clinging to those things, what you can say is, I get to receive the gift of pastoring this community and not the imaginary one, the huge one that I wish I had. Or for someone like Kristen, it becomes, I get to spend every ounce of energy out there, test myself, and what an absolute gift it is to just be able to run and bike and swim. It's to receive life as a gift, and that's what prayer does for us slowly. And I'm intrigued by this story in Luke. I find it absolutely fascinating because it's about prayer and about nine people missing the point entirely. It goes this way. Now, on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. And as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. There's the prayer. Here's our petition. This is what we want. And when he saw them, he said, go show yourself to the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. Looks like they got what they were praying for. But one of them, when he saw he was healed, came back, praising God in a loud voice, threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. And Jesus asked, wait, we're not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. Notice that Jesus only pronounced one of the 10 well. Only one of the 10 has actually received true healing. One got it, the other 9 missed it. The 9 got what they wanted in prayer, but they missed the point entirely. Only one of them realized that true healing, true life and vitality comes in the experience of being able to receive life as a gift. This is the interesting thing about physical leprosy, right? It's an interesting disease in that it's actually nerve damage that leads to numbness. And so what happens with leprosy is you actually hurt yourself. It's not that the disease does, but you become numb. So you can cut yourself and not notice it, burn yourself and not notice it. It's a numbness. And the point of prayer, would say, is this, is to heal, to start to form an identity that takes away the numbness of our hearts. And only the one in this crowd gets it. I'm numb. I've been looking at the world about how I can grasp my own significance, and I'm failing to see what an absolute gift life is. True healing is to be healed from the numbness of our hearts, to be awakened by the sensation that life is a gift, and to receive it that way. And that's going to bring us to Eucharist this morning. And you know, every time we do Eucharist, I like to try to bring a bit of a different angle on it, but Eucharist means thanksgiving. It's a ritual we do that reminds us there are reasons to give thanks. And so prayer, a Eucharist identity, it pulls us out of ourselves. Instead of clinging to things that we wish we had, it allows us to, you know what, when I let that go, I can just receive life as a gift. And so we come this morning to remember Jesus, his death, his resurrection, in that he showed us the way, the path, that even as Jesus prayed to be spared on the cross, he ultimately surrenders to the way of love. And by doing that, he opens up a whole new world of possibilities for us.